Welcome to Coffee with Catholic Workers, a podcast from and about folks involved in the Catholic worker movement. I'm Theo.
And I'm Lydia. We've both been active in the Catholic worker for about the past decade, and we're excited to introduce you to some of our favorite people from the movement. Except that's not what we're going to do today.
On today's mini-episode, Lydia and I are going to share the Catholic worker aims and means. My friend Matt brought it to our attention that a few different guests have mentioned this document, but that there are probably plenty of folks out there who have never heard of it.
Like we've discussed before, the Catholic worker believes in decentralization. So there's no one voice or thinker or document that fully defines what the Catholic worker is. It's this ever-growing, evolving group of people who continue to clarify thought and make a world where it's easier to be good, in their own specific historical context. Some like to say that the Catholic worker is really an organism rather than an organization.
So while we think the Aims and Means document is a really great intro and overview to the movement and its historical concerns, it shouldn't be thought of as a constitution or manifesto or anything like that. There have been other summaries and articles aiming to concisely give an overview of the Catholic worker through the years, penned by Dorothy and other folks.
So this current manifestation is printed every other year in the May issue. The Catholic Worker newspaper puts out from the New York City Catholic Workers. They ultimately have the editorial control of it, and over the past few decades, there have been slight changes made when it's published. Some in the broader Catholic Worker movement lament that some topics aren't specifically addressed in the Aims and Means, most notably an explicit commitment to challenging racism and other oppressive systems. Like most of the things in the Catholic Worker, not all houses or workers in the movement hold fully to the Aims and Means. Rather, it's really the starting point for communities to determine their specific values and approach towards systems.
With that little intro, let's get to it. Here are the aims and means of the Catholic worker. The aim of the Catholic worker movement is to live in accordance with the justice and charity of Jesus Christ. Our sources are the Hebrew and Greek scriptures, as handed down in the teachings of the Roman Catholic Church, with our inspiration coming from the lives of the saints, men and women outstanding in holiness, living witnesses to your unchanging love, as it says in the preface to the Eucharistic prayer for holy men and women. This aim requires us to begin living in a different way. We recall the words of our founders, Dorothy Day, who said, "God meant things to be much easier than we have made them." And Peter Marin, who wanted to build a society where it is easier for people to be good. When we examine our society, which is generally called capitalist because of its methods of producing and controlling wealth, and is bourgeois because of prevailing concern for acquisition and material interests, and its emphasis on respectability and mediocrity, we find it far from God's justice. In economics, private and state capitalism bring about an unjust distribution of wealth, for the profit motive guides decisions. Those in power live off the sweat of others' brows, while those without power are robbed of a just return for their work. Usury, the charging of interest above administrative costs, is a major contributor to the wrongdoing intrinsic to the system. We note especially how the world debt crisis leads poor countries into greater deprivation and a dependency from which there is no foreseeable escape. Here at home, the number of hungry and homeless and unemployed people rises in the midst of increasing affluence. In labor, human need is no longer the reason for human work. Instead, the unbridled expansion of technology necessary to capitalism and viewed as progress holds sway. Jobs are concentrated in productivity and administration for a high-tech, war-related consumer society of disposable goods, so that laborers are trapped in work that does not contribute to human welfare. Furthermore, as jobs become more specialized, many people are excluded from meaningful work or are alienated from the products of their labor. Even in farming, agribusiness has replaced agriculture, and in all areas, moral restraints are run over roughshod, and a disregard for the laws of nature now threatens the very planet. In politics, the state functions to control and regulate life. Its power has burgeoned hand in hand with growth in technology so that military, scientific, and corporate interests get the highest priority when concrete political policies are formulated. Because of the sheer size of institutions, we tend towards government by bureaucracy, that is, government by nobody. Bureaucracy in all areas of life is not only impersonal, but also makes accountability and therefore an effective political forum for redressing grievances next to impossible. In morals, relations between people are corrupted by distorted images of the human person. Class, race, and gender often determine personal worth and position within society, leading to structures that foster oppression. Capitalism further divides society by pitting owners against workers in perpetual conflict over wealth and its control. Those who do not produce are abandoned and left at best to be processed through institutions. Spiritual destitution is rampant, manifested in isolation, madness, promiscuity, and violence. The arms race stands as a clear sign of the direction and spirit of our age. It has extended the domain of destruction and fear of annihilation and denies the basic right to life. There is a direct connection between the arms race and destitution. The arms race is an utterly treacherous trap and one which injures the poor to an intolerable degree, said Gaudium et Spes.
In contrast to what we see around us, as well as within ourselves, stands Thomas Aquinas's doctrine of the common good. A vision of a society where the good of each member is bound to the good of the whole in service of God. To this end, we advocate personalism, a philosophy which regards the freedom and dignity of each person as the basis, focus, and goal of all metaphysics and morals. In following such wisdom, we move away from a self-centered individualism towards the good of the other. This is to be done by taking personal responsibility for challenging conditions, rather than looking towards the state or other institutions to provide impersonable charity. We pray for a church renewed by this philosophy, and for a time when all those who feel excluded from participation are welcomed with love, drawn by the gentle personalism that Peter Morin taught. A decentralized society. In contrast to the present bigness of government, industry, education, healthcare, and agriculture, we encourage efforts such as family farms, rural and urban land trusts, worker ownership and management of small factories, homesteading projects, food, housing, and other cooperatives, any effort in which money can once more become merely a medium of exchange and human beings are no longer commodities. A green revolution. So that it is possible to discover the proper meaning of our labor and our true bonds with the land. A distributist communitarianism, self-sufficient through farming, crafting, and appropriate technology. A radically new society where people will rely on the fruits of their own toil and labor. Associations of mutuality and a sense of fairness to resolve conflicts. We believe this needed personal and social transformation should be pursued by the means Jesus revealed in his sacrificial love, with Christ as our exemplar, by prayer and communion, with his body and blood, we strive for the practices of nonviolence. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God, Matthew 5:9. Only through nonviolent action can a personalist revolution come about, one in which one evil will not simply be replaced by another. Thus, we oppose the deliberate taking of human life for any reason and see every oppression as blasphemy. Jesus taught us to take suffering upon ourselves rather than inflict it upon others. And he calls us to fight against violence with the spiritual weapons of prayer, fasting, and non-cooperation with evil. Refusal to pay taxes for war, to register for conscription, to comply with any unjust legislation, participation in nonviolent strikes and boycotts, protests or vigils, withdrawal of support for dominant systems, corporate funding or usurious practices are all excellent means to establish peace. The works of mercy, as found in Matthew 25:31-46, are at the heart of the gospel. And they are clear mandates for our response to the least of our brothers and sisters. Houses of hospitality are centers for learning to do the acts of love, so that the poor can receive what is, in justice, theirs. The second coat in our closet, the spare room in our home, a place at our table. Anything beyond what we immediately need belongs to those who go without. Manual labor. In a society that rejects it as undignified and inferior, besides inducing cooperation, besides overcoming barriers and establishing the spirit of sister and brotherhood, besides just getting things done, manual labor enables us to use our bodies as well as our hands, our minds. Dorothy Day. The Benedictine motto, Ora et Labora, reminds us that the work of human hands is a gift for the edification of the world and the glory of God. Voluntary poverty. The mystery of poverty is that by sharing in it, making ourselves poor in giving to others, we increase our knowledge and belief in love. Dorothy Day. By embracing voluntary poverty, that is, by casting our lot freely with those whose impoverishment is not a choice, we would ask for the grace to abandon ourselves to the love of God. It would put us on the path to incarnate the church's preferential option for the poor. We must be prepared to accept seeming failure with these aims, for the sacrifice and suffering are part of the Christian life. Success, as the world determines it, is not the final criterion for judgments. The most important thing is the love of Jesus Christ and how to live his truth. Well, that wraps up for us our mini episode of Coffee with Catholic Workers. If you want to reach out to us with any comments or thoughts, you can email us at coffeewithcatholicworkers@gmail.com. We want to give thanks to Chris from the Bloomington Catholic Worker for help with editing our episodes, for David Hayes for our music, and Becky McIntyre for our graphic.
Thank you for joining us again for some clarification of thought. Hopefully today's conversations have been enlightening, and maybe even that you're encouraged to go out and help build a world where it's easier to be good.